This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
David West, man, he really wants to win a ring.
He really does.
Kevin Rafuse.
To be good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzak.
Between Rose, Mello, and Noah, those guys are really well-known players, and that right there kind of gives you the all super team vibe.
Well, if you like that, you're gonna love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this.
Let's go.
So I'm an iPhone user. Tim is an iPhone user. Justin is an iPhone user. Mm-hmm. I think we all know for a long time the iPhone kind of had the smartphone game on lock.
Yep.
Samsung has been the biggest challenger, no doubt. And the Galaxy phones are great. I'm not trying to poop on Android people. Like, I'm all about, you know, I just personally am used to the iPhone, so I roll with it. I like iMessage.
I will say, getting our podcast, a little behind the scenes podcast talk, getting our podcast on the Google Play Store was way harder than getting it on Apple.
Yeah, it was really difficult. It was like a weeks long process. iTunes, it took like a day and a half.
It was like a second. So just, you know, that's just from our side of things.
Right. But so anyway, so we have iPhones. Samsung, though, has definitely been catching up. The Galaxy phones get a lot of great reviews. Google's releasing a phone, too. That's neither here nor there. But we do want to mention that. But the Galaxy Note 7, it's the newest one. Let's just say they've been exploding and catching on fire. The last time I actually flew, when I was flying back from the presidential debate at Hofstra in New York, the flight literally specifically said, if you have a Galaxy Note 7, it better be off the whole time, because somebody had one like catch on fire on the plane and it had to make an emergency landing. And now Samsung has recalled all of them. They've stopped making all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, holy crap, these phones actually blow up.
Yeah, no, I was going to say the exact same thing. When I flew to Boston, they were like, they announced so many times that if you have a Galaxy Note 7, you have to have it off the entire time. You cannot like use it and preferably not even have it on the plane.
Did you fly JetBlue to Boston?
No, Southwest.
Oh, I mean, I love Southwest. Don't get me wrong. Dude, I fly JetBlue any chance I get.
It was a trip from hell, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, no, you were a trooper. You flew all the way up to Boston and then literally got in the car and drove all the way back down to Jacksonville.
Yes, I flew up to Boston. It was supposed to be a direct flight, but then the flight got changed to Baltimore. And then once I landed in Baltimore, that flight got delayed. So then once I landed in Boston, we were supposed to go Boston to Philly that night, mm-hmm. and we were supposed to get in at like midnight, but I didn't land in Boston till like 9:30. We didn't get into Philly till like 3 in the morning.
That's rough.
It was, I would
say, yeah, because Boston to Philly is not an easy drive. That's a good six and a half hour drive.
Yeah, luckily
it's not like
it was
New
late.
York. Like, New York and D.C. and Baltimore are all pretty close to Philly, but Boston, of those, like, that northeast corridor is kind of more up there and away from the other ones.
When we did drive, at least it was so late, there was no traffic anywhere. Like, we didn't have to worry about any kind of traffic.
Oh, yeah, that's huge, because you can lose hours in New York and in Philly and in D.C. D.C. especially. D.C. traffic and Southern Virginia traffic is the worst.
We didn't hit any D.C. We went through Richmond, but we didn't hit any traffic there either.
Dude, when I moved to Jacksonville, when I drove from Philly to Jacksonville, I lost 2.5 hours going 25 miles.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, I got through D.C., I'll be cool. And around that Fredericksburg area, dude, it just owned my soul. A bit upsetting, but you know what is hopefully not upsetting? This episode of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rafuse. Joining me, not to my left, is my co-host Tim Tompkins. Tim is still on vacation. Unfortunately, he will not be joining us for this midweek episode, still burning those 92 hours of PTO that he accrued over the year. But behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzar.
Giggity.
That's right. It's a midweek. The giggity is here.
It is a midweek. And each week we like to thank you guys for hooking us up with a review, because hooking us up with a review on iTunes specifically helps us move up the ranks so that other people can find us and spread the Drive and Dish love.
We do. This week, the review is from America. It's titled Nothing But Net. It's by D Beagles 32. It's a 5-star review. And D Beagle says, these guys do an outstanding job of talking hoops in an entertaining, thought-provoking way. Whether you are an NBA fanatic or a casual fan, this show is a fun listen. Keep up the good work, guys.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
It is. It was very nice.
Yes. Nothing
Tim's
but
not
net,
here
though.
To crush that review.
I
so
will
that's
say,
good.
Nothing But Net might be true 43% of the time. A lot of the time, I think we're hitting rim before it goes in.
43%?
Yeah.
That's so low.
But that's like a swish ratio. Yeah, like we're still making it, but it's hitting the rim.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just not
a
swish.
And we Nick Young an episode once in a while where we celebrate a little too early and then just kind of, you know, like they all can't be diamonds.
Exactly.
That was... If somebody wants to go back and listen to that episode is really funny. That was the title of the name of one of our episodes. And Tim and I, it was like 2.5 years ago. Both of us were just in brutal shape on a Saturday morning. And it was like, we left and we're like, that was one of the worst episodes we've ever recorded. And it was like our highest rated episode for like a year and change.
It was like, God damn it.
I just didn't understand. But I also don't understand why iTunes puts all our bad reviews at the top. But that's neither here nor there. But it's just like, come on, iTunes. Like, we got a lot of great reviews and you got to put the 4 bad ones at the top.
Yeah, the one guy I think didn't like my voice, but it's whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
The Timberwolves have received interest from several teams on Ricky Rubio, but they say they are unwilling to move Rubio until Chris Dunn establishes himself. Rubio has 3 years left remaining on his contract. Good news for the Knicks. Derrick Rose has been found not liable in the gang rape civil lawsuit alleging Rose and his two friends had sex with his ex-girlfriend without her consent while she was under the influence. Ben McLemore, understandably, is not going to sign an extension with the Kings, instead opting to become a free agent next season. And finally, the annual GM survey is out, and here are a few results. 69% of GMs believe the Warriors will win the title. LeBron James believed most likely to win MVP at 47%. Karl Anthony Towns is the player they'd most like to start a franchise with. And Phoenix Suns guard Devin Booker most likely to have a breakout season, while most GMs believe that Chris Dunn is most likely to win Rookie of the Year. We posted this on our Facebook and we want to know what you think. Give us a like on Facebook at Drive and Dish Podcast and tell us if you agree with the GMs on these results. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
And we got a special guest on the line now. It's his second time joining us here on the Drive and Dish NBA podcast, Mr. Michael Caskey Blowmane. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at The Real Mike KB. Mike is a writer for 24/7 Sports, CBS Sports, and also the Sixers Insider for 97.3 ESPN in South Jersey. He is a process truster, along with Justin and I, most importantly. And before we, you know, Mike, we brought you back on here because we're talking Sixers. Our listeners are well acquainted with Justin and I's fanhood at this point. But before we get into all that, it's exciting times here in Jacksonville, Florida. We're based out of Jacksonville. Obviously, you're a Philly guy. And we are super excited because we're finally getting Wawa. For those people who aren't familiar, because I know you understand how awesome Wawa is, I just need you to tell the listeners how big of a deal this is for us.
I mean, it's a game changer, man. There you go. One-stop shop for, you know, you can get some gas, a sandwich, a drink, and, like, you know, some contact lens solution all in one shop. You're safe.
The problem is Tim's not here. I'm so sad he's not here to hear your conversation on this, because every time we go to Orlando or something, and I'll send them a picture of me going to Wawa, and he's like, I don't understand why you're eating gas station food. And I'm like, you don't understand.
He needs to let it go.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that I don't think people, unless you really grew up with it in Philly, like, really understand that it's an institution of Philadelphia. Like you said, the outsiders, it's like, why are you eating gas station food? But the people in Philadelphia, it's like the greatest. Wawa hoagies are an institution of the city. They tell you, like, yo, you got to go to Wawa and get yourself a hoagie.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for Hoagie Fest down here for the first year. Oh, man.
The line is going to be outrageous. But we're here to talk Sixers. I know Justin and I, like I said, are really excited about this episode to talk our favorite team. And we would be remiss not to start with the good news, because we want to talk good before we talk bad, and that is Joel Embiid is playing. It's been 2.5 years. He's on the basketball court in preseason. His minutes are up to about 15 minutes a game. He's just looked phenomenal so far. Super active on the defensive end. Great lateral quickness. Great hands. There's so much potential there on the offensive end as well, with the way he can just dominate the post inside. He's out-muscling guys. A force on the glass. He's shown off the range a little bit in terms of the three-point shot. So I guess, you know, what have your initial impressions of Embiid been, and what can we realistically expect to see from him this year? And should we temper the excitement at all? Because, I mean, it's high right now.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think so far Embiid has been you know, every bit as impressive as people, you know, kind of expected. And for me personally, he's even been, it's been a little more pleasantly surprising than I even expected, kind of how quickly he's picked up on some aspects of the game that you alluded to, especially, you know, his lateral quickness, his, you know, his defensive IQ and his ability to just cover the entire paint and just like a huge giant. And his IQ, it all just came together really quickly for a kid that, you know, hasn't played organized basketball in, you know, almost 2.5 years. The last time he played, he was a, you know, a 19-year-old kid, a freshman in college. So to make that jump to, you know, what we've seen over this first handful of preseason games where, you know, of course he's been a little bit rusty, but by and large he's been, you know, extremely impressive. And I think that's a, you know, a very positive sign for Sixers fans. We've heard, you know, all the hype about what he could potentially be over the past 2 years. And, you know, he's finally had the opportunity to get out there and show it a little bit. You know, the foot hasn't looked to be like any sort of a hindrance on him. There was a brief scare where he fell down last game against the Wizards, and it took him a minute to get up, but that was knee-related. His foot has looked fine. So, you know, by and large, I think everything that we've seen out of Embiid this season has been extremely, you know, positive and promising, and has kind of helped mask the you know, we didn't get into it yet, but the disappointment of the Ben Simmons injury. I think that the way Embiid has played and how exciting it's been has kind of helped mollify the, you know, the disappointment of Sixers fans for losing Simmons for an extended period of time. You know, Embiid's getting another boost tonight. The Sixers are playing the Pistons tonight, and he's moving up from 15 to 18 minutes, and he's supposed to play in the second half tonight for the first time. So, you know, it seems like each game is just continuing, like, promising progress. You're getting a little bit more minutes. You're getting a little bit more comfortable. And, you know, obviously, knock on wood, if he stays healthy, I think we can expect him to play, you know, anywhere around maybe half the game in the regular season, 24 to 26, maybe at the higher, 28 minutes a game, you know, split between the two halves. And I think, you know, he had a double-double in you know, about 14 minutes of action on Thursday night against the Wizards. So, you know, with ample time, I think, honestly, as long as he stays healthy, it seems like sky's the limit for him.
Well, and Brett Brown has mentioned in interviews, and really we've seen it in the preseason so far, too, of how they want to run not only the defense through him, but the offense through him as well. And really, we've seen him get a lot of touches so far. I think his usage rate was somewhere well over 35%. So definitely, you know, really taking a lot of shots every game so far. I guess how much of it do you attribute to them trying to get Embiid involved to shake the rust off of not having played in 2.5 years? Or, I mean, realistically, do you think this trend is going to continue into the season?
I do think it's going to continue into the season and throughout his career. Probably not to the exact same extent that it has during the preseason. I don't think he'll, you know, have a 35% usage rate throughout his entire career. Obviously, you know, Ben Simmons, again, to talk about him, when he comes back, you know, by default, he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, and the offense will run through him also. So, you know, it's not going to constantly run through Embiid, but with his skill set that Embiid has, where he can kind of, you know, go high post or low post, back to the basket, face up, you know, he has the size to look over defenders, he has the IQ and really good court vision. He hasn't really got to display it much so far in the preseason. I think he only has one assist in 5 games, but he's a talented passer and he has the vision. So I think that they will like to get a lot of the, you know, the offensive sets starting out, running through him, getting him an early touch and letting him kind of, you know, decide if he wants to take his man to the basket or look for, you know, other opportunities. So I do think both offensively and defensively, the team is really kind of looking to make him the centerpiece.
I saw some reports saying that Embiid's not going to play in back-to-back games. Is that going to be for the entire season? And is that just because they're conditioning him, or is that more just because they don't want to risk injury or anything like that?
I think it's fluid. It's to start the season, that is what GM Brian Colangelo said. He said that there would be a pretty strict minute restriction on Embiid, whereas, you know, whatever, if they decide 24 minutes is how much he's going to play, that's what he's going to play. You know, even if it's a close game with a few minutes left in the fourth, he's not going to be going back in. They're going to stick to that minute limit. And, yeah, they also mentioned that, you know, he would likely – they didn't say as though it was, you know, written in stone. They kind of mentioned it as a fluid situation. But to start the season, at least, he will not be playing in the second of back-to-backs, I think, is what they said. He'll play in the first one. And I think, yeah, I think it's mainly just, you know, the team has been, you know, extra precautious over the past few years during this rebuild process. You know, obviously, Nerlens missed an entire season. Joel missed 2 entire seasons. job, missed more time, I think, than people thought was necessary with his current injury. So it's kind of just the MO of the team recently to, you know, give players more time to recover than, you know, actually even necessary. And I think that's the that's what they're doing here with Joel. I think, you know, with the amount of time and, you know, energy and, you know, potential that they put into Joel, I think they just want to really take every precaution into bringing him back slowly. So I think this season will kind of be mainly to get his feet back under him. You know, I think they'll increase his minutes and what he's able to do throughout the season. But I don't expect to see him playing, you know, 30, 35 minutes at any point. I think it's really about getting his confidence and his feet back under him and kind of getting an idea of what he can be going forward.
You mentioned it's kind of like the team's mentality. I forget where I read it, but I read something about how they were, you know, their practice facility is set up where, like, the players can hang out there, they can develop chemistry together, they really can spend a lot of time there, work out together. Like, it's very almost like building a family type thing. Is that kind of the vibe you're getting from the Sixers organization, is they're trying to make everyone it be like a family and really develop everybody together?
Yeah, absolutely. A great way to put it. I think that's a huge emphasis of the team. The new practice facility that you mentioned is, you know, it's just we were able to get a tour of it prior to training camp. And like you said, it's really, and Brian Colangelo talked about this also, it's set up to be a place, just like you said, where players can kind of go there to hang out and just, like, be there. Whereas, you know, a normal practice facility, you know, you go there for practice, you leave. This has, you know, the training, all the training facilities there. It has pools, you know, weightlifting. It has areas like sleep chambers that the players can chill. It has, like, lounges.
Wow.
So it's really built to kind of, yeah, inspire a sort of, you know, like a camaraderie-ness among the players. And I think especially with the Sixers team, they have so many young guys that are, you know, going to be looked upon, at least a lot of them, to kind of develop into the core of the team moving forward that's going to be built around. So I think it's really important, and I think Brian and the rest of the front office is trying to emphasize it. You know, they want these players to grow together, both on and off the court, and I think, you know, you have the best success on court if you, you know, have some sort of relationship and enjoy your teammates off the court as well, and I think that is absolutely sort of what they're trying to, you know, develop here in Philadelphia.
Well, and we've seen them really promote the chemistry between Ben Simmons and between Joel Embiid, obviously, who look to be the two core guys that they're building around.
They were hanging out at the Eagles game.
Yeah,
for sure.
At the Eagles game and all sorts of other events around town. They were at Beach Bash together.
I missed it by a week. I'm so pissed. I missed going to it by a week.
That is unfortunate. You could have seen Embiid stuff a little kid, which would have been awesome. The other core guys that had been mentioned in the past are obviously the two other big men on the roster who we haven't really talked about at this point, and that is Jahlil Okafor and Nerlens Noel. I've been a big advocate of, if I had to choose one, I would take Nerlens, because I think that what Nerlens does on the defensive end of the floor is just so much harder to find and is so more valuable in today's NBA than what Ja can give to you on offense. That being said, I think the writing has been on the wall, at least from my eyes, that they're trying to move on from Nerlens. It seems like Ja is going to be the guy that sticks around. I guess, you know, what are your impressions here? You know, do you think Nerlens is out the door as much as I do? You know, where do you stand on the Joel, or not the Joel, excuse me, the Okafor-Nerlens debate? And I guess, what have been your impressions of what is going to happen to resolve the situation? Because, Nerlens said it himself, they have to do something. You know, they can't just keep all three of these guys on the roster forever, even if they do at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, man, that's a great question. Like you, I've always been I've been a big supporter of Nerlens. I think, like you said, his skill set is, especially in today's NBA, the style of play, his skill set is, you know, pretty rare and extremely valuable. You know, with that being said, though, I, you know, completely agree with everything you said. I think Nerlens Noel is out the door. I think his days in Philadelphia are numbered. It's not necessarily saying that Ja is a better player or a better fit with the team. Like I said, I was at Media Day at the new training facility when Nerlens was speaking, and, you know, that was just a player that was not happy to be in his current situation. I mean, I can't really sugarcoat it. Like, there was a lot of positivity in Media Day. You know, Ben spoke, Joel spoke, Ja spoke, Dario spoke, the whole team spoke. Nerlens came out, and it was just a switch in energy. He was clearly not happy. The night before is when the initial report came out of him saying that, you know, it was silly and that something needed to be done and he didn't quite understand what the Sixers were doing. That report came out the night before Media Day by my former colleague, Keith Pompey of the Inquirer. And basically, Media Day, he really just doubled down on his comments. I think some of us expected him to kind of, you know, back away from the story comments and be, you know, a little more team-friendly in Media Day, and that's just not what happened. He really just doubled down, said that, you know, he didn't understand why they were all still there. He didn't understand Brian Colangelo's, a plan to kind of wait and see. He said, you know, basically the minutes need to be handed out now, and he really didn't understand the plan. And, you know, since then, he's yet to play in a preseason game. He played in one preseason game, the first one, hasn't played since. He's missed the last four with a groin injury. And, you know, it just seems like he does not want to be here. And I think that that's eventually going to lead to, you know, him being shown the door, whether it's before the season or, you know, sometime during the season. He will be, a free agent next summer. He'll be due for a contract. At this point, it's not sure if, you know, I don't know if the Sixers think that he's really done, proven enough that he's worthy of, you know, basically a max deal, which I'm sure he'll be looking for, with his skill set. Mm-hmm. And, last thing, if Joel is able to stay healthy and really is, you know, the guy of the future, he kind of makes Nerland's skill set not replaceable, but he will be the defensive anchor. Like he is so solid on the defensive end, and if he's going to be your starting center that can play 30 minutes a night, you know, having another guy coming off the bench is making major money for it with the defensive skill set. It just doesn't necessarily make sense. You know, Ja has 3 more years on his rookie contract. I think the team will hold on to that for a little while, and I think this is my long-winded answer of my way of saying that I do think that Nerlens Noel is, you know, going to be out the door sooner than later for the Sixers.
Well, and I know no one really likes to talk, I guess, the actual player names and trade rumors, but I guess what are some teams that you think are most definitely going to be in the talks to approach Noel? I know the Celtics have been in numerous rumors for him as well.
Yeah, the two teams that I've heard all the way going back to the draft night this past year, the two teams that I've heard that were most interested were the Celtics, like you mentioned, and the Houston Rockets. I've heard a couple different times during draft night and then closer to the season, maybe about a month ago, I heard from league sources that the Rockets and the Sixers were kind of talking about deals centering on Nerlens and Pat Beverly, maybe, you know, along with some other pieces. And obviously, the Boston rumor picked up a lot of steam about a month ago when I think a proposed rumor came out, and then Nerlens tweeted something out about how he loved, you know, being from Boston, and he happened to remove his Sixers. He had a Sixers banner on his Twitter. I think he took that down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in Philly, that obviously sparked a big to do with people wondering if this was Nerlens' way of saying that, you know, he wants to play for the Celtics or he's going to play for the Celtics. So, you know, I'm sure there's other teams that are, you know, have been in contact with the Sixers. I think there's definitely a market for a guy with a skill set like Nerlens. But those are the two teams that I've at least heard the most that have been at least interested and active in talking to the Sixers.
Well, and I know Philly fans can be very unforgiving. Even if you just change your profile picture, they'll jump on that and they'll hold on to that and grill you on it for a while. But I wanted to talk about Okafor's injury because it kind of, at least the timeline seems kind of weird, because I thought they were saying for a while that he was only going to be out, like, I don't know, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, stuff like that.
Yeah, but it wasn't supposed to be this long.
He hasn't played a preseason game yet. So I guess what's going on there? Are they just being really cautious, or is there something bigger?
Unless there's something that I haven't been told personally, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, and they're just being extremely, almost over-the-top cautious. Mm-hmm. Everything that they've been telling the media members is that he's, Ja's been on track. He has been practicing. Some of it's been, individual practices. Some of it's been team practice. But, he has been working on it. And I think, honestly, it's just been a matter of that they're just waiting. I feel like they don't necessarily need to see him in the preseason. Although, it's kind of an interesting decision. You'd think you'd like to kind of get him out there with Embiid a little bit,
yeah,
and Dario, and see how they play. But to be honest, if he's back out there come opening night, I think it's really just a matter of, you know, they're just being extra patient, letting him. They did kind of emphasize at Media Day that he was a little bit out of shape since it was, you know, a knee situation. So all summer he wasn't really able to work on his cardio and his conditioning. He did a lot of lifting and got his, you know, his upper body and his frame and shape, but as far as basketball shape and cardio, he was, you know, not up to speed, basically, because he was off all summer. So mm-hmm. I don't know if, you know, that could be playing a factor. They're kind of just letting him build back up and get into shape before, you know, they don't want to toss him out there and have another injury happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, unless there's something that the organization just isn't being, you know, upfront about at this point, which I think we would notice, like I said, once the regular season starts, if he's not out there, then I think we can start asking questions. But until that point, I think it's really just a matter of them being, you know, overly cautious with his return.
Well, see, we get into year two of Jahlil Okafor now, and last year it was such an up and down season for the most part, in terms of obviously the downs being the off the court issues, which led to them bringing in Elton Brand last year to kind of help on that aspect. I think the biggest knock against Okafor's game has obviously been defense. People worry about whether he can guard an NBA pick and roll, and you know what his rebounding rate, and you know really being able to compete on that end night in and night out. At the same time, he looked like a force on the offensive end. Brett Brown last year, I remember at one point said there aren't many guys in the league who can just come in and drop 20 a night on everybody. You know, he is a strong dude. And, you know, like I said, it seems like he's going to be the guy that survives this Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor, you know, battle for that position. And I guess, you know, he showed flashes of a jumper at times last year, it seemed. And I guess, you know, what should we realistically expect to see them work on with Jahlil here in year two? And I guess, you know, you mentioned his fit with Embiid, and that's something that I'm very curious to see. What type of fit do you think, having seen them at practice a little bit, he can have with Joel Embiid? Because, you know, we know that him and Nerlens don't work. Can him and Embiid work?
I think him and Embiid can work better than him and Nerlens, you know, strictly because of the skill set. Embiid, obviously, is a guy that can go inside and outside, and that's something that Ja's been working on, to circle back to your question. I mean, the main thing, obviously, that he needs to improve on his defense. I think that was, you know, the main on-court detractor to his year last year. I don't think anyone, you know, everyone saw what he was able to do offensively, as, you know, especially for his age and a rookie. His offensive skill set was, you know, beyond his years and extremely impressive. That's, you know, certainly not a question. I think the main, you know, the main drawback, I guess, for a lot of Sixers fans and just pundits in general was his, you know, his defensive, basically, just his quickness and his IQ. He seemed lost and out of position, you know, way too much last year throughout the course of the season. But, you know, I think that defensive, the quickness and just the IQ is certainly something that has been worked on to whatever extent they were able to work with him during the offseason since he was injured. And, you know, expanding his range to not three-point range. I don't think he's going to be a guy like Embiid to take the ball out past the three-point arc. But I do think they want him proficient, you know, up to 20 feet, kind of like that. You mentioned his mentor, Elton Brand, that, you know, I think they want him to be reliable with that mid-range game, you know, very solidly so they could run, you know, a lot of pick-and-rolls, pick-and-pops, and have different looks on the offensive end. You know, for Jahlil personally, for me, he's kind of tough to judge after one season. I know a lot of Sixers fans and the fan base are ready to write him off. You know, they wanted him traded since basically last year. To me, I was never in that camp. I think it was way too early to really, you know, he played, I think, 58, maybe around 60 games last season, maybe slightly less total. And it was on a team that was just, you know, amongst the worst in NBA history, and he just didn't have the talent around him on either end of the floor. You know, I think his defensive deficiencies kind of stuck out even more so because the team in general didn't have, you know, great defensive players around him. Mm-hmm. So I think it kind of made it look even worse. And on the offensive end, I think his job was a little bit tougher than, you know, it normally would be because he was, you know, he drew double teams in his first game last season, you know, right off top, I think. You know, when he has some more guys around him, he put a Simmons around him, an Embiid, you know, a couple guys that can shoot from the perimeter, and that, you know, automatically kind of opens the, you know, the floor up for him on the offensive end too. So for me, I mean, there's certainly areas where he can improve upon, you know, obviously, that, and it's necessary if he really wants to have a successful career. But I also think that drawing, you know, too many conclusions about what he did on the court last season with that Sixers team is kind of, you know, not necessarily fair to him. So I think this year, his second season will be huge, you know, as far as looking at his development and getting an idea of, you know, how he can potentially fit with these guys. Like you said, Embiid and Simmons really seem to be the two guys that are, you know, the cornerstones of the Sixers now going forward. Like, those are the two guys that the team is going to be built around. So, you know, this year, seeing how Ja fits with those guys and kind of how his game has progressed and how he fits in with a team that's a little bit better and more talented, I think will be huge. So he's, you know, hopefully he can get, you know, get healthy right at the start of the season and hit the ground running, because I think, you know, this second year will go a big, big way in determining his, you know, future in Philadelphia.
You mentioned Elton Brand being kind of a mentor. Is that why they have him there? Because I saw a lot of people, at least on the Sixers Reddit, I think one of the subreddits was literally called "Why are we even wasting a roster spot on Brand?" Is he there just to help development, or do you think he's there to actually play some minutes?
Yeah, you have to think he's there just to help development. I mean, that's basically what he was there for last year. Mm-hmm. You know, he ended up getting a little bit of playing time last year down the stretch because we had a lot of injuries. Obviously, like I said, Ja missed some games in Nerlens. There was injuries. I was personally pretty surprised when, you know, Elton signed back on. Mm-hmm. As far as a roster spot this year, I thought, you know, that maybe he would come back in a front office capacity. So I was definitely a little bit surprised to see that he would be competing for a roster spot. He said that, you know, when he was talking prior to the start of preseason, he said that he was there to, you know, the team kind of reached out to him. They really appreciated the veteran leadership that he provided both on and off the court last year. He said that a roster spot this year was not guaranteed to him. He, you know, he has to compete for it. Mm-hmm. It's not written in stone that he's going to be one of the final 15. Because, you know, obviously him making the roster would end up costing, you know, one of the other young guys, whoever it may be, a roster spot. So, you know, it's not guaranteed that he's going to be on that final roster, but I think the team really just liked everything about him last year. I mean, he's really the ultimate professional. Yeah. You know, 18 years in the NBA, a former number one pick. He's seen, like, the highs and the lows. So I think he's just a great guy for the organization to have around with, you know, young, impressionable big guys like they have.
Well, I think that's the one thing that really got learned from the Sam Hinkie process. You know, I'm still a pretty big Hinkie guy through when all said and done, and, you know, but we're not here to talk about that. But I think them they learned that lesson. They brought in the vets. They brought in Jared Bayless. They brought in Gerald Henderson, obviously keeping Elton Brand around. And so there's definitely a little bit of a change in that part of the culture with the Sixers. But I want to go back to these fringe guys because, you know, Justin mentioned, and then you mentioned again, you know, kind of that battle for that last spot and some of these younger guys. And, you know, to me, a guy like Brandon Paul, for example, is a bubble guy who, you know, I think has a chance of making the 15 this year. Do you think they'll go with a guy like him over maybe a guy like Hollis Thompson, who's been here for 4 years now and you realistically know what you're getting out of him? Or like Nick Stauskas, for example, seems to be kind of on the outs and it's a prove it type year for him. I mean, for that last roster spot, I think which of these fringe guys do you think really hangs on?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. A lot of people in Philly are interested in Cat Barber, who's been, you know, the third point guard for the mm-hmm. team throughout the preseason and hasn't necessarily, he missed the first two games and he hasn't played a ton since. Sean Long was another one, James Webb. So, you know, what you asked is honestly a great question that I really don't have an answer to. It's really this, I think, what direction they want to go. Like you said, I think the guys for that last roster spot will come down to, you know, a guy like Nick Stauskas and a Hollis Thompson, you know, obviously Elton Brand, if, you know, with, depending on which way they go with him. And then, you know, Paul Webb and Barber and Sean Long. I do think that guys like Hollis Thompson, I think he will make the roster. You know, he's the longest standing guy that's been here. He's been here since Brett Brown's first year. And, you know, with the team now, I think they need floor spacing. So I think that, you know, his skill set obviously is his three-point shooting, and the same goes with Nick Stauskas, although he's, you know, struggled with consistency over his first 2 years. And I think he's certainly a fringe guy. If I had to bet right now, I do think he makes the final roster and gets, you know, one more shot. He was, you know, only 2 years removed from being the eighth pick in the 2014 draft. I don't think, you know, I don't think they're completely ready to move on from him yet, especially considering, you know, once Simmons comes back and with Embiid in the post, they'll want to have guys surrounding them that can, you know, knock down shots, and that's what Nick is supposed to be able to do. So I think they'll give him another shot. Then, you know, a point guard is really the interesting spot there for the Sixers. You're looking at, you got obviously Sergio Rodriguez and Jared Bayless are the two veterans they brought in this summer. So they're not going anywhere. And then, you know, the third spot I think will be between, you know, TJ McConnell, who made the team last year, is kind of a surprise and stuck through the whole year. And then a guy like Cat Barber, or even, you know, someone like that. I think they'll go with guys that they've seen before. I don't really expect a lot of surprises when the final roster comes out. I think McConnell would be on there, Stauskas, Hollis Thompson. But like I said, this is just my personal, you know, my opinion. They could go in a different direction there and take a guy that they haven't really seen in, you know, a regular season play and take a flyer on him. But, you know, I'll personally be very interested to see what direction they go with in that last couple spots.
Well, and you were talking about how they're definitely going to want guys who can space the floor and knock down the three. One of the guys who they've, I guess, relied on in the past to do that is Covington. His field goal percentage and his three-point percentage, at least in the preseason, hasn't been too hot. I think he was like 28% field goal and 31% from three. Is that an area of concern, or is that just, you know, maybe a preseason fluke?
I think it's an area of concern. I've been huge on Covington ever since they picked him up out of the D League. But, I mean, to be completely honest, he hasn't really developed to the point that I thought he was going to improve. And in the past 2 years, he's good. I mean, he can shoot, and he has a solid offensive game, but he hasn't really developed to the point where I thought he would. And I think he enters this season as the team starting small forward. I think Brett kind of has hinted at that. But I do think that spot is not written in stone, and if these struggles continue, you know, he has not been very good in the preseason, like you said. You can just tell, you know, the shot, it's just not consistent. I mean, he's knocked some down, but it's not to the point where you would like, where if he gets an open look, you're saying to yourself, like, all right, this is money.
Right.
It's been a little bit more inconsistent. So I do think, you know, his size and his skill set, he's long. He's like 6'8" on the perimeter. He's a pretty decent perimeter defender. So, you know, I definitely think they like his presence out there. And when he's hot, I mean, he's among some of the best shooters, at least in the East, when he's knocking it down. He has really good range and a nice stroke. So I think he'll start the season alongside of, you know, Jared Bayless, Gerald Henderson, Saric, and Embiid, I think, will be the starting five. But, you know, with other guys on the roster competing for time and spots and, you know, opportunity, I think that it's not, he hasn't earned the starting spot, you know, without any, you know, questioning. I think if he starts in a month into the season, the struggles are continuing like we've seen so far in the preseason, that, you know, a move could definitely be made.
Well, and this is, I mean, realistically, this is the best team that he's going to play with, and I'm hoping, you know, once a guy like Ben Simmons comes back, but they have great passers on the team regardless, but, you know, giving him the looks to thrive, and, you know, it seems like he could have really locked that position down, and I mean, I completely agree with you. I think he's a lock to start come opening night, but, you know, I am a bit concerned, and I wonder if he's not, you know, he's been, realistically, I guess what I'm trying to say is he's been the biggest like success of the true emphasis of the process of these guys that you pick up off the scrap heap. But I'm beginning to wonder if he's not more than a bench player. That's definitely something I'm going to, you know, have to keep an eye on this year. We've mentioned it really early on in this interview, but we haven't really gone into it so far yet. And that's Ben Simmons. You know, obviously a pretty big wet blanket to start the year. I remember when the Ben Simmons news broke, I was getting dinner with my girlfriend, and it just, like, it was a Friday night, everything was great, and it just, you know, really put a damper on it. I just was pretty much staring into space for the rest of dinner.
I took a flight from Jacksonville to Boston, and when I landed, I just, you know, you put your phone on airplane mode, and my phone just started buzzing, and I was like, oh, what's going on? Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
It's just after all the, with Embiid and with Nerlens and everybody that's missed time, it's been a lot of patience. But at the same time, you know, I think people should still be obviously tremendously excited about this guy. You know, this is a guy that you obviously being up there have seen practice. You've seen what he's brought to this team in scrimmages and in summer league and such. You know, what has stood out to you the most watching Ben Simmons about his game so far? I'm just fantasizing about him and Embiid in the pick and roll, but, you know, what else does he bring to this team offensively that you're just not going to get anywhere else?
His poise and control, man. That's, I mean, to me, that's what's jumped out to me the most already. I mean, the skill set, it is what it is, but he does not play or come off like a rookie. Like, in the practices that I was able to see, and obviously, you know, his summer league performance in Vegas, he plays like a veteran. Like, he can control the game. He can control the pace of the game. His IQ is off the charts. You know, he's a step ahead of his teammates. Like, some of the passes that he made in summer league, you know, I'm sure you guys saw the vines of, he was putting the ball like two steps of a teammate in stride of where he would be. The stuff that you don't see from a kid that's 1 year, you know, coming out of 1 year in college. So, you know, the skill set speaks for itself. So the thing that just impressed me the most has really just been his level of poise and maturity, both on the floor and off the floor. Like he obviously been thrust into this kind of superstar, role and spotlight in a city that's, you know, pretty big for things like that in Philadelphia. And he's just like, you know, he's handled this entire situation, I think, really well. It's kind of like he's almost been preparing for this for, you know, a few years now, and I think that's really paid off. Like, he's one of those guys that's been really, ever since he came, you know, over from Australia to America, high school, prep school, college, he's basically been preparing to be a top player in the NBA, and I think that preparation has really paid off for him, you know, mentally, which for some rookies I think is a big obstacle that, you know, he's not going to have to worry about. So when he can finally get out there, I think that, man, like you said, just fantasizing about him and Embiid playing together, it's so not fair that we finally get Embiid back and then, you know, a couple days later, Simmons is out and we don't even get to see one game of them together. But, you know, it's actually, it's to try to at least find like a silver lining. It's nice. We got to see what Simmons was able to do in summer league by, you know, running the team. Now in preseason, we're getting a chance to see what Embiid can do kind of as the focal point of the team. And now, you know, hopefully Simmons is able to, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen the reports. There's some that are speculating that he'll miss, you know, the entire season, that his agent, Rich Paul, will hold him out. You know, the initial reports were about a three-month recovery time, which would put him back, right around the new year, which would give him, you know, ample time to play for the Sixers this season. So that's obviously a huge storyline to pay attention to going forward. I don't think anyone knows exactly if he will or won't be playing this season. There's obviously positives to both sides. The Sixers fan in me, of course, wants to see him out on the floor, as soon as possible. But obviously, you know, there's benefits to not rushing him back. So, you know, I think that Sixers fans, even though it is kind of, like you said, a wet blanket, it was, you know, a huge buzzkill. I was on the same boat as you guys, because initially when they announced the injury, they said he had rolled his ankle and was just going to be missing like a preseason game. Mm-hmm. And then I left the facility with that news, and I was like, whatever, it could be worse. And then I kind of stopped paying attention. I think I was out getting food or something when I got text about the updated news, and it was just, you know, it was crushing, because like you said, there was so much positive momentum. Finally, you know, Embiid was back and healthy. Saric came over. Like, you know, everything was finally kind of going in a positive direction. And then that kind of came to balance it out a little bit. It was definitely crushing news. But, you know, I think in general, like, if Sixers fans can keep a level head, like, it's a slight setback right now. But we have Embiid going forward. And, you know, health permitting, they have the makings of a, you know, extremely formidable duo going forward.
I guess they put a pin in that bone, which is supposed to help with the support for the healing process. So hopefully everything is good when he does come back and all that. But I wanted to talk about, I guess, the tempo of the team, because they have so many big guys, but they're young, athletic, big guys. And last year they were sixth in pace. And I believe they were dead last in defensive efficiency and bottom 25 for offensive efficiency, so it wasn't that great. But I'm guessing my question to you, with the new look of the team, with these big guys, are they going to slow up the pace? Are they going to keep the pace going? And how do you see that affecting the efficiency on the defense and offensive end as well?
It's funny, and that's a great question, because the way their roster is constructed, you wouldn't necessarily expect them to be a high-paced team, but ever since he's taken over, Brett Brown has just emphasized pace. Not even Brett, honestly, the entire organization has emphasized, you know, pace, getting up and down, you know, spreading the ball around, kind of like the emergent style of play in the NBA today. And Brett has said specifically, you know, he wants the team to run this coming season. I think that some of the veterans they brought in are pretty conducive to that. I know, Sergio Rodriguez leads kind of a free-flowing, fast-break offense. Jerry Bayless and Gerald Henderson are two guys that are capable of getting out in the break. And, you know, obviously Ben Simmons, when he gets back out there, is basically a one-man fast break, as he showed in summer league. He has, you know, he has the ability to get a defensive rebound and, you know, take it the full length of the court and finish by himself or dish it off to a teammate. So I think that the emphasis for the Sixers is really going to be on getting up and down the floor. You know, a lot of the stuff that they emphasize, like I was talking about earlier in the training, their new training complex, it measures, you know, everything having to do with, you know, basically exercise, you know, mm-hmm. your heart rate, sleep rate. It monitors your, you know, your running, your improvement. And all of that is basically in an effort to, you know, maximize the, you know, the ability of the players to perform. So, you know, I think that basically conditioning is a huge thing for Brett and the Sixers. They want, you know, the Sixers to be one of the most conditioned teams and able to get up and down the floor, which they have the past couple of years. But, you know, like you said, that's come at the expense of, you know, defensive efficiency. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, with a guy like Embiid down there, if they're able to kind of incorporate the defensive style of play that they want, that they would like to, you know, have going on, but also keeping the up-tempo pace. Because both the bigs that they do have are, you know, they're capable of getting up and down the floor in that pace. Embiid can get up and down. Nerlens, you know, Jalil a little bit less, but that's something he's been, you know, trying to work on. So I do think that the emphasis will be, you know, get up and down, get in the fast break. And then, it, you know, if things kind of break down and fast break doesn't necessarily, you know, play out, then they'll look to kind of get into that secondary offense mm-hmm. and look to run things through Joel or Ben and when he's back out there.
I guess I just have one last question. It's kind of been a highlight of preseason. Rashawn Holmes, he's been leading the team in rebounds, steals, second in points. His per 36 numbers are fairly impressive for
Rich
the
homie Sean.
Exactly. For the five games so far, I guess, do you see that translating into the regular season? Like, what do you think about this kid?
Yeah, man, I'm a big Rashawn Holmes fan. I like him a lot. I think he started to come on pretty strong at the end of last season. Mm-hmm. And I think I tweeted something out about this during the couple of early games in the preseason. But he almost needs to start getting mentioned when, you know, in the national conversations when we're talking about the Sixers' logjam of big guys and how mm-hmm. a move needs to be made. You know, it's Embiid, Okafor, Nerlens. You know, it's getting to the point where Rashawn Holmes needs to be mentioned in that conversation. Like, his play has been deserving of minutes. And, you know, if this translates into the regular season, which I fully expect it to, as I said, he started to kind of come on at the end of last year, you know, he'll be deserving of minutes. He's super athletic. He's an awesome offensive rebounder, great finisher. Honestly, he's a better offensive player than Nerlens. Not close to him on defense, but he has better hands. He's worked on his you know, his ability to go out to 15 feet. He's knocked down a few pick-and-roll jumpers this preseason, which has been, you know, really promising. It's something that he didn't really have in his arsenal last year. So, you know, I don't think he's necessarily a starting caliber big in the NBA, at least not yet. You know, I'm not trying to put a ceiling on him. But I do think he's a serviceable, athletic big guy that could easily go into a rotation and come off the bench and play, you know, 15, 18, up to, you know, 20 minutes a game for, you know, a team like the Sixers. So I think that, that's certainly going to factor into their rotation this year. And it honestly might even impact their eventual decision to, you know, to make a move with one of the bigs, knowing that, you know, Rashawn's another one that they have in their depth there.
Well, getting that rebounding rate up was so important with his development mm-hmm. to me, and it's good to see that we've seen that in the preseason so far. And Brian Colangelo, it really seemed to have gone out of his way to show him some love, so it definitely seems like he's a part of the team going forward. But Michael Kasky, Blowman, we want to thank you for joining us, man. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at TheRealMikeKB, writer for 24/7 Sports, CBS Sports, as well as the Sixers Insider for 97.3 ESPN up in South Jersey. But Mike, before I let you go, we always love ending our interviews on a light note. And again, we do appreciate you coming on second time with us, so you've officially reached friend of the show status. But we want to let you go with on a lighter note. Between Joel Embiid, between Ben Simmons, obviously from Australia, between Sergio Rodriguez coming over from Spain, there's a lot between Brett Brown, obviously, as well in the mix, being from Australia. There's a lot of quality accents on this team this year, like more so than usual. So I guess if we're making a quick power ranking of the accents, who's number one? And let's get a top three quick.
For me, Joel tops the list, man. I love listening to Joel Embiid talk. It's just like his accent combined with the way he talks. I don't know if you guys don't follow him on Instagram.
Of course.
You know, Instagram added those new those like video, like the Snapchat
yep.
Video things. His Instagram videos are pure gold. They are absolutely hilarious. Him like talking. There's one, I don't know if it's still up. It was yesterday. He was in the cold tub at the Sixers training facility with a trainer. I couldn't tell who it was in the video, but it was kind of a bigger guy, and Joel is just yelling in the thing. He's like, "Look at his fat ass!" And I was, I couldn't stop watching. I literally was like, just watching. I was dying laughing at his accent. So I mean, Joel has to be top for me. Number two, I'll give Brett Brown, just because I've heard him talk so much now over the past, 3 years and change, that his Boston accent kind of combined with a little bit of like Australian twinge is just like stuck in my head there. and at three, I'll actually go with an underdog and go with Timothy Luwalu Cabaret.
Oh,
he has a really nice, like a soft, kind of like a, I guess it's French. I'm not the best at accents, but he has a nice way of speaking. It's kind of soft and, I feel like it's one that probably does pretty well with him for the ladies.
That French one, is hitting a home run there. That's a sleeper. I didn't think of Luwalu Cabaret. That's a good one. Yeah. I like that too. Definitely a sleeper up there. But Mike, one, thank you again for coming on. Really appreciate you. Make sure you follow Mike on Twitter at TheRealMikeKB. And we're standing strong in the process. We're gonna get through this together.
I hope so, man. I definitely appreciate you guys having me on. And anytime you need someone to talk about Wawa again, I'm your guy.
Bless up. We are the biggest Wawa fanatics of all time. Thanks, Mike. And we got one last division preview for you guys coming up. It'll be our Northwest division preview, so stay tuned for that. It's going to be our last Western Conference division, and then we are going to be right in time for basketball. I believe that episode is literally going to drop the day before regular season basketball starts. Yep. It's here.
We made it. That's the key here, is we made it.
Major key.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Good to know.
Let's go while we're young.
All right, I think they get the point.